May it please the court, my name is Jim Armstrong. I'm here on behalf of petitioners. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. The plain language of Section 4412B2 bars FERC from ordering any retroactive quality bank adjustments except for a single specified 15-month period. FERC violated that statute when it issued its December 2008 order approving retroactive changes for a 30-month period dating back to June of 2006. The language of the statute in question must mean what it says, and I'm quoting, "The Commission may not order retroactive changes in TAP's quality bank adjustments for any period that exceeds the 15-month period immediately preceding the earliest date of the first order of the Commission imposing quality bank adjustments in the proceeding." This language is unconditional and unambiguous. It prohibits retroactive adjustments for any period other than the 15-month period before FERC's first order imposing adjustments.
Everyone agrees on that.
Pardon?
Everyone agrees on what you said there. The only question is the one which is the first order.
Well, I think there are actually two questions. That is certainly one. But the second question is, even if, as FERC contends, the September 2006 order is the first order, the statute says that there can be no retroactive adjustments for any period except the 15 months preceding the first order. Yet they imposed retroactive adjustments for periods of time after that first order. That's the problem, the ultimate problem with the opinion. Because there's no question that there are 30 months of retroactive adjustments here. And I'll address in a moment the argument that some of those months were functionally prospective, which they weren't.
I mean, I guess you're worried about retroactivity. And Congress very obviously was worried about retroactivity. It's a little odd to say that it can't go beyond 15 months before X, whatever X is. And once you've determined that, there's also a banned period thereafter.
Well, the way the unambiguous language of the statute reads, the only period for retroactive adjustments precedes the first order.
It's not a retroactive adjustment if it occurs after the order. That's the point.
No, the point is that Congress clearly intended to change that aspect of the pre-existing law. The pre-existing law that was in place at the time this statute was passed in 2005 was based upon notice principles, and that's what FERC continues to argue here. They argue that the first order...
If an order comes down and it requires you to do something in the future, you would not say that those changes that are being ordered are retroactive.
No, but that's not the case here. The retroactivity happens when the December 2008 order is entered, changing the processing cost adjustment and applying that retroactively all the way back to June 2006. The September order that FERC relies on as the first order simply accepted the carrier's proposal for a processing cost adjustment.
But they had to pay the adjustment after that, right?
Quality bank participants had to pay the processing cost adjustment.
Right, so you were arguing plain language. It said, the statute says impose. And that clearly covers the word impose.
Well, I would submit that all FERC did in the
statute. I know that that's your position, but you're arguing the statute's unambiguous. And, I mean, I would assume you'd concede that that the word impose could just as easily cover what happened here, namely the FERC accepted the rate, thus making it obligatory, correct?
No, I think the word impose is much more on the end of the spectrum of fix or prescribe a rate than accept a carrier proposed rate, which is what happened here.
One obvious way of approaching it is asking what would have happened if the Commission had done nothing at all, and Section 3G7B of the tariff answers that question, right?
I believe it does, yes.
Yeah. So the FERC order of September 26, so far as the rate to be charged in that period, added nothing.
Well, the problem still remains, even if,
You don't have to contradict me. There's no obligation when I judge asks a question for counsel to object.
The difficulty is that what FERC ignores is there is a 30-month period where changes are made in the past. That's a retroactive change. And FERC's rationale that the September 26, 2006 order put all parties on notice, the changes would go back to June 1 of 2006, and that there might be refunds, that notice element is exactly what Congress intended to change in this statute. Bear in mind that when this statute was passed in 2005, there was an existing case that had been pending since 1993. And on notice principles, the very notice principles that FERC still relies on here, the initial decision in that pending matter at the time had ordered refunds back to 1993 on the basis that the parties were on notice that there might be changes. Congress said, no, we're concerned about unlimited retroactive adjustments to the quality bank on Alaska refiners. There's no dispute about this congressional history. They were concerned about extended refund periods and the impact of that on Alaska refiners who couldn't go back after these retroactive changes and change the price of their products. With regard to the pending case at the time, they said, no, we're not going to allow retroactive adjustments back to 1993, regardless of the fact that the parties were on notice that those things might change. We're going to limit that back to February of 2000. There was a reason for that. There was actually a stipulation by the parties on the heavy distillate cut at that time that any change could go back to February of 2000. Congress limited in that pending case. Then they said in the second part of the statute that's at issue here, for any claim pending or filed after the enactment of this statute, there can be no retroactive adjustments for any period except that 15-month period preceding the first order. They didn't say you could have it after the first order based on notice.
Suppose we agree with you on the impropriety of using the 2006 order date. Does it necessarily follow that the compliance order is the only serious alternative?
I think there's another possible alternative, and it's present in the record here, that it could be opinion number 500, which is the one that set the parameters for how we will calculate the processing cost adjustment, and then that order directed the carriers to file a compliance filing that actually set the specific dollar amount of the processing cost. We believe that until the actual compliance order is approved, which set the 8.13 cents per gallon on a going forward basis, we think that's the order.
As
the other possibility is opinion 500.
As a practical matter, what are the kinds of opportunities for delay and sources of dispute between Order 500 and the order 500 and the compliance order?
Well, there could be a rehearing request for opinion 500. There could be a rehearing request after the compliance order. There could be a petition to this court. There are any series of orders, and frankly, that's why we believe the Congress said the first order imposing quality bank adjustments, because it doesn't have to be the final order. There could have been a situation in this case where the compliance order is filed, a petition for rehearing is denied, a petition to this court is filed. This court could have reversed, could have gone back down, up and back several times, just as that pending case did that was pending at the time that the statute was passed. And we believe that Congress wanted to pick a specific date, the first order, when the parties know, okay, from that date back 15 months, there's going to be a change.
You said that the date that Congress picked for then pending proceedings was a date that had been agreed on.
It had been agreed on for one of the two cuts that was at issue. The two cuts that were at issue were resid and heavy distillate, and the parties had stipulated that their processing cost that was litigated in that long proceeding could go back to February 1 of 2000.
Do we have any idea what were the theories or reasoning behind the selection of that date?
Don't believe that the congressional history reflects that. I think they wanted to make the two cuts it would appear that they wanted to make the two cuts retroactive back to the same date. But what's absolutely clear in the congressional history is they were very concerned about the extended refund period. And the difficulty with FERC's interpretation here of what's the first order, coupled with their theory that once the first order is entered, the parties are on notice and everything after that is functionally prospective. The problem with that is that it renders the Congress's intent meaningless. Because under this interpretation, if FERC had taken, here FERC took until December of 2008 to approve the compliance filing and approve changes back 30 months. If they'd taken another year or two or 3 years to make that decision, we'd have 2 or 3 or 4 years of retroactive changes. If their opinion had been appealed to this court and gone up and back 3 or 4 times.
Congress could have solved that by saying the final order, but they didn't. And the statute says the first order, which seems to contemplate there may be a whole series of orders.
Well, there is an interpretation that would abide by that unambiguous language, and that is you put the retroactive change in effect between June of 2006 and September of 2006, and not thereafter until the compliance filing. Now, the FERC and their interveners argue that can't be a result that Congress intended, but if you're going to strictly read the language, it says the only retroactive changes can be before the first order, not after.
That seems to me a totally strange interpretation. We
believe it is as well, Your Honor. That's why we believe the September order can't be the order that Congress contemplated, because Congress clearly was concerned about extended refund periods and the impact on the refiners. And yet, under FERC's interpretation of what's the first order, there can be an unlimited period of time of retroactive changes during which a refiner has no idea what his crude cost is. That is, in fact, the effect of their interpretation. This case could have gone on for 10 years, and under their interpretation that the September 26th order is the first order, you could have 10 years of changes at the end.
Yeah, but we're stuck with the language that Congress chose here, and said the first order imposing. And your theory is that that must mean after a hearing, right?
That's correct.
But it didn't say that. I mean, it would have been very easy for Congress to have said that.
Well, you're right. They could take no action.
Who's right? Judge Williams or me? I think we just asked you different questions. I don't think we can both be right. So which one of us is right?
Correct. Tough call.
What was your question again, sir?
My question was, Congress said imposing. It didn't say imposing after a hearing. And I thought that's what your theory was.
Well, our theory
is that it had to be a rate imposed after a hearing. In other words, a rate found to be just and reasonable.
We don't believe FERC has the power to impose until after a hearing. All it did was accept a carrier-proposed rate.
But my point is that, I mean, the arguments you make are really interesting, but we have this language, and if the language is ambiguous, we defer to FERC's reasonable interpretation of it, correct?
If that interpretation is consistent with congressional intent, that's correct. That's step two of Chevron.
Right.
And that's the point here is their interpretation cannot be consistent with congressional intent, because congressional intent clearly was to limit the period of retroactivity. And yet under FERC's interpretation that the September 26th, 2006 order imposed an adjustment, there is no limitation on retroactive changes.
Okay.
It can go on for years and years, just like the pending case that Congress was clearly concerned about when the statute was passed.
Generally, that they accept the filing as subject to refund, pending an examination of whether it's a lawful and just rate. The proceeding could go on for years and.
That's exactly right. And what Congress limited this change to the TAPS Quality Bank. They didn't make the change across FERC's entire jurisdiction. But clearly they were concerned about the impact on Alaska refiners of unlimited periods. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my small time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
May it please the court. I'd like to begin by addressing a couple of points that Counsel for Refiners has made. One is that refiners keep saying that if FERC's interpretation were correct, this would lead to the unlimited retroactive refunds that Congress was concerned about when it enacted
it
Section...
It doesn't mean unlimited. What the argument is that it would lead to exactly the same refund conditions as existed before enactment of the statute.
Right. And I think it's very important to note that throughout this appeal, the refiners have ignored one important part of FERC's order and FERC's interpretation. And I'd like to direct the court to JA 165, paragraph 45, where this is in the rehearing order, where the commission specifically stated that if opinion 500 were reversed on appeal, the commission would then establish a new proceeding to determine the processing cost adjustment on remand.
But there's absolutely nothing in the statute or its legislative history that suggests that's the line that Congress was drawing between orders vacated by this court and orders altered by the commission itself.
Well, I think there is indication in the very limited legislative history that we have where the senators who introduced the previous legislation went into great detail about the history of the
pending proceeding. Sure, that was the kind of case that precipitated the statute.
Exactly.
But there's nothing in the statute that says the court, Congress is only concerned about cases where a court reverses the commission. And why would that make any sense anyway? Why would Congress do that?
I think that the Congress is very concerned about the possibility that refunds could go back as long as 12 years.
Which is what they can do under your theory.
Right. Can't FERC do that on its own? That is, say, create a long, long time up and back within FERC?
That's certainly possible. You know, these proceedings are very complex. Everyone is different. Some go through hearings. Some have settled issues. You know, there's no way to predict what a particular quality bank proceeding is going to entail. However, I think that Congress really seemed to be concerned about the cases that go up repeatedly for remand and come back. And the commission addressed what would happen if that were the case. If there is a remand, then there will be a new proceeding on remand and a new first order imposing quality bank adjustments, and the 15-month period will then start with that first order on remand.
Am I right in thinking that paragraph 45 is the sole indication of a way in which the commission's interpretation would ever lead to the statute having any effect?
No, I don't think that's true.
Some
I think
other?
That
What other hypotheticals are there?
There are several instances where the full 15-month limit would come into play. But certainly, even in this proceeding, the commission said that part of that refund period came into play.
In other words, apply to the perfectly ordinary case where you have the standard order allowing the rate to go into effect and provision for proceedings to vet the new rate. This is going to follow the order, the equivalent of the September 26, 2006 order, is going to follow promptly after the filing of the new rate, right? And it's always going to, the 15 months is never going to be needed to take us back to the standard effective date of the new rate.
Well, the entire 15-month period for retroactive adjustments may not come into play.
That's a ceiling.
It's a ceiling, counsel.
It's a limit on the amount.
Exactly. So it can never go back more than 15 months. But for
it doesn't have to go back more than a few months to be operative to produce your result.
Exactly. But in this case, it went back 4 months. Four of the 15 months. So the 15-month period did apply. The fact that the entire 15-month period didn't apply doesn't mean that
it's
a nullity.
Is there any instance other than the one identified in paragraph 45 in which, under the commission's reading, the statute will diminish in any way the retroactive effect of any rate order?
One instance that was raised by parties below was the instance where there were reparations, for instance, that could go back as much as 2 years. Now, the commission...
Is your answer to Judge Williams that any time the commission would have ordered retroactive refunds for a period longer than 15 months, but for the statute has an effect?
I'm sorry. I think, I mean, the 15-month period, you know, certainly is a limit on retroactive refunds. In this case...
Well, in every case in which the commission, but for the statute, would have ordered more than 15 months of refunds, the statute has an effect.
I think that the commission has pretty much conceded that section, if I understand your question...
I don't think you do.
I don't think I do. That section 4412...
It all depends what the starting point is, right?
That section 44... Well, the starting point is going to be the first order imposing...
I am offering you a situation in which the statute has effect, right? Other than paragraph 45. It would have an effect in every case in which the commission, but for the statute, would have ordered more than 15 months of refunds.
Yes, but it could, you know, I mean, that could apply to any case depending on the situation. Sometimes... The commission doesn't order any retroactive adjustments. In this case, it did because...
If you pick an order as early as the order allowing the rate to go into effect, certainly in the context of 15.7, there will be no operative effect whatever, right? Because it will always be less than the 15 months.
There probably, in most cases, will be less than 15 months.
How can there be any? I guess there could be the instance where the commission doesn't do anything after the new rate is filed by the carrier. Does that ever happen?
I don't know of any quality bank proceeding where that.
I'm just talking about generally. All the commission activities. There are all these statutes that it applies. They all provide for carrier filed rates. They all provide for. The commission to do something, and they all provide a default condition as to what happens when the commission doesn't do it. I'm just inquiring whether there's any occasion where the commission does not do the sort of automatic thing with the carrier filed rate.
I mean, I think there are instances.
Accept it subject to further consideration.
If there are no protests filed to a particular rate filing, then the commission can order an investigation on its own, but can also simply accept the filing and allow it to go into effect.
There's no instance where the commission just does nothing. Is that correct?
I think there are very few cases where that could happen. I can't think of one. The commission usually acts on a filing.
So in every 15.7 context, barring the paragraph 45, the statute has no effect under the commission's interpretation.
Well, again, I would not agree that it has no effect. It may not need to give effect to the full 15-month period. But in this case...
You talk about the 15 months as if it were some sort of invitation to the commission to go way, way, way back. But if the ordinary background norm limits it to 4 months, 60 days, whatever, putting on a 15-month ceiling is a complete waste of time.
Well, in this case, even the refiners concede that if it were not for the facts of this case, the commission could have gone back 15 months before whatever the first order is.
Before whatever the first order is, that's the...
And even they concede that even if the first order were the September 2006 hearing order, it could have gone back 15 months, except that the reason
As I understand their arguments, it's assuming arguendo that that's a proper date.
Right.
Then various consequences would flow.
Exactly.
And the principal argument is what is the proper date.
Right.
And their primary argument is that the September 26 order is not the first order.
That's correct.
That's their primary argument.
Yes.
Right.
That's correct.
And under the commission's theory, as I understand it, your answer to Judge Williams is that except in the subset of cases where there's a court-ordered vacature of the commission decision, the statute has no effect on how many months an order can be retroactive, correct?
No, we don't concede that. There is a limit. And
without this statute, before the statute, if a carrier filed for changes in the whatever it is, would the commission do what it does in gas and electric and so on and so forth? In other words, accept the filing subject to refund while they adjudicated the legality of the change?
Yes, that's correct. Section.
So this statute would have had no effect upon the forward-looking refunds, which is what the petitioner here is complaining about.
That's correct.
The only effect of the statute is on the retroactivity part of it.
Okay. Yes. Yes, we agree with that, Your Honor. I just wanted to address one or two other points. Judge Williams, you asked if there was any reason why Congress selected the 2000 or why the parties stipulated to the 2000 date.
Yes.
In Section 4412B1. And if you...
No, my question was anterior to that, and that was why we were told by counsel that that picked up a date that had been worked out with respect to one of the two cuts involved
right.
by the parties.
Right.
And so Congress picked that up. What I was trying to get into, if there was an answer,
there is
whether we knew why the parties picked that
right.
date.
And there is an answer to
okay.
that.
Which is
and this is not in... the joint appendix, you know, it gets back into the
yeah.
weeds of the preceding underlying proceeding. But what happened was that the parties presumably agreed. Well, let me put it this way: the February 1, 2000 date corresponds to the stipulation, which in turn corresponds to a very similar order that was issued here. That where the commission accepted a replacement price for heavy distillate because the old proxy price had ceased to be published. And so that order was issued around February 1st, 2000, and the parties presumably felt like they had ample notice as of that date.
Proceedings have been going for 7 years, right?
Yes. Yes. But that is, I think, the reason for the February 1st, 2000 date. And I think it's interesting that it's the same type of order that we have here for the September 2006 hearing order.
Why did it take 7 years for that sort of order to emerge in that proceeding?
Well, these orders, as I said, are very, very complex. It's a tremendous amount of filed testimony.
It was not a procedure starting order as the
no it wasn't it was in the middle
order.
But there were a couple of remands by this court, various settlements entered into, various proceedings were consolidated for hearing. It was quite a complicated proceeding. I see my time is up.
Yep. thank you. Did Mr. Armstrong have any time left?
We have
an intervener. I am sorry, I didn't mean to cut you out. Go ahead.
Yes, may it please the court.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Matthew Estes for ConocoPhillips, right. Alaska. Just going to this last point about this February 1st date, as someone that lived through it, I think I can give more, shed more light on that. In fact, that was a procedure starting order. It was almost exactly identical to what happened here.
It was a procedure starting order following 7 years of
dispute. No, that's not correct, Your Honor. The 7 years before related to different cuts, but again, this has happened a few times. The heavy distillate cut that had been accepted at that time, the proxy price stopped being published. So independent of the 7 years prior litigation, a new proxy had to be developed for the heavy distillate cut, and the February 1st date was the effective date of the new proxy, which had been put into place subject to refund. And the party stipulated to that because the commission's order had said that was subject to refund. It was the exact same kind of order as this. It then got, that case then got consolidated into the case dealing with all the other issues in the 7 years prior to that. So it all got litigated.
Okay, but that consolidation had occurred when Congress adopted 4412?
Yeah, that had already happened at that point. And our interpretation is that Congress adopted that date precisely because the commission had said that that heavy distillate cut was, that proxy price was in effect subject to refund. And so the parties had the same notice that they have here. Another point I wanted to go to is you seem to have struggled with what possibly could this 15-month period have meant that Congress limited to refunds here. I agree with counsel for the commission that the primary issue is this illegal order after an appeal, and I agree that's an unusual circumstance, but I think you have to go back to the statutory language, which clearly says that the period is before an order imposing a quality bank adjustment. And I don't think there can be any doubt that the September 26 order imposed a quality bank adjustment.
How do you treat as an order imposing something, an order of which, if it had not been entered, would not change anything, or the absence or presence of which would change nothing so far as the price that was charged?
Well, it would change it in this sense that it set it for hearing so that it could be
different.
Changed at some point.
Well, that would be if Congress had used that language, we wouldn't be here.
But I think you
have a different set of briefs.
That's true. If that had happened, this would be a different circumstance. But if you read the order, the final concluding paragraph of the commission's order says, the TAPS carriers shall use a quality bank adjustment equal to the price of the low sulfur heavy diesel published price minus 10.4549 cents. That's as specific an imposition of a fixed rate as you could possibly could get. And once you accept that that is the order imposing a quality bank adjustment, then you have to accept that Congress must have been dealing with an unusual circumstance where there could have been retroactivity more than 15 months before that. There is another potential circumstance where you could limit retroactivity, which is the statute allows reparations up to 2 years, and the 15 months would reduced by somewhat a two-year order of reparations.
If this order, the September 26 order, had not issued, the price could not change.
What happened was the TAPS carriers submitted a proposed price for heavy distillate.
Right.
If the September 26 order had not issued, in effect, the price proposed by the TAPS carriers would have gone into effect as a final non-appealable order at that point. And then parties could have appealed that straight to this court. That's not what happened. Instead, it was set for hearing subject to refund. And we're here today rather than 2 years ago.
So they could have.
If the commission had not acted at all.
The parties who did not like the newly filed rate didn't get FERC to do something, they could come straight here to complain against FERC's inaction?
Yes, because under the tariff, if FERC did not act within 60 days after the filing, then the proposed rate becomes the effective
right.
rate.
Right.
So at that point, that's the final rate that's in effect. And the
parties objecting would come here to object to what FERC had not done. Right?
Well, because if FERC, in effect, would have accepted that rate, so it would have acted a sub silentio.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
So, how much time does Mr. Armstrong have?
Mr. Armstrong has 30 seconds.
Okay. Well, we used up your time, so you can take 2 minutes.
Two quick points.
Yeah.
I may not use all that period of time. There is nothing, I would challenge the court to read the intervener's brief very carefully on this issue of the February 2000 date. Mr. Estes made the statement that they believe Congress thought that the parties were on notice in February of 2000, and that's why Congress allowed refunds back to that date. There is not a shred of evidence in the legislative history that supports that statement. And there's nothing in the intervener's brief that cites to that legislative history that supports that statement. That date was a stipulated date and nothing more. And so that date does not support their argument that when FERC enters an interim order, it puts the parties on notice. It simply doesn't do that. What Congress was concerned about was the business uncertainty. And putting the parties on notice that a rate is going to be in place in the interim, but that it's subject to refund, doesn't do anything to eliminate that business uncertainty. Instead, here's what happens in this case. When the December 8, 2008 order enters and changes the interim rate from 10.45 cents to the final rate of 8.13 cents, and it says that new rate, that 8.1, will apply all the way back to June of 2006. That cannot be characterized as anything other than a retroactive quality bank adjustment. The rate had been 10.45. The refiner had been running its business on the basis of 10.45. And what Congress said was, you're going to be at risk for your business decisions that 10.45 rate may change, but your risk is going to be limited to 15 months. That's what Congress said. That was the balance that Congress struck between all of the quality bank participants, that there may very well be some limitation on refunds, and there may very well be periods of time when the interim rate cannot be changed, but that's the balance Congress struck. One other point I'd like to make.
But isn't that true in all rate-making subject, when a rated carrier-filed rate is accepted subject to refund, it may be that what the FERC has accepted will be the final order. On the other hand, it may be lower, it may be higher.
That's right. And what Congress was concerned about and changed, only with regard to the quality bank, was that unlimited period of refunds. That's what they changed. And contrary to what the interveners argue in their brief, that's a change that can, in the future, inure to the benefit of all quality bank participants. Depending on the particular case, somebody may owe refunds. But if this statute is interpreted correctly by this court, those refunds will be limited to 15 months, and that's what should take place in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted.